I'm impressed. So many of you today. Are you sure you've come to the right lecture? Are you sure it's not a marketing or psychology lecture? It's Nick Zubanov personnel economics lecture? Okay, well, thanks for coming. I've recently discovered that the name of this course is Personal Management / Personalentwicklung und Mitarbeiterführung. So, of course, none of it is taught in this course. It's personnel economics. So I decided to do a lecture on sort of Mitarbeiterführung, which is leadership, which is the topic of today's lecture. Now, when it comes to leadership, then Nick and leadership, they are really on the opposite ends of whatever spectrum you can think of, right? So I don't pretend to be an expert in leadership, but what I am a sort of expert in is in economics, and today we're going to look at the economics of leadership. So forget about, or at least temporarily, forget about these beautiful words, oh, leadership. Let's draw some boxes and arrows to understand the model of leadership and all this stuff, which I am not really neither willing nor capable of teaching. So today we're going to be talking about the economics of leadership, and the central problem we're going to consider in this lecture is the problem of the credibility of the leader. So this is really the biggest problem. How do you make a credible leadership? Now, before we get there, let me, by way of introduction, let me try and make a distinction, draw a distinction between leadership and authority. Remember, we had a lecture on authority. Agion in Tirol. There is principal and there is agent. There are N projects and everybody is investing effort into finding out which project is good, which project is bad. And then, you know, you can have P formal authority, you can have A formal authority. So authority is basically a modality of management where the holder of authority has the right to give orders within a certain and determine the action of the agent within a certain range of actions. So authority is basically principal says to the agent to do action X, and if this action X is within the permissible range of actions, then the agent has to perform this action regardless of what he thinks about it. This is authority. Leadership is not authority. Leadership and authority are in fact very different from one another, and it's one of the many popular misconceptions about leadership that it is authority. This misconception is not entirely without its empirical grounds, of course. Very often, if not most of the time, people who are supposed to carry out leadership actions are also having formal authority to do things, right? So think about Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, who made the decision to let hundreds of thousands of migrants in Germany. She was within the law to do so, so her action may be taken as an action of authority, but her action may also have been taken as an action of leadership. And we will refer to this. We will refer to this action later on in the lecture. So, but authority and leadership are very different, nevertheless. Even though the same people who have authority also act as leaders, the leadership pure from authority is something different. So here is Mahatma Gandhi. He never had any formal authority. He never had the power and the rights and the legal mandate to tell people to do something. And yet he commanded a lot of real authority with millions of his followers, in the sense that these followers would voluntarily, without coercion and without any formal employment contract with Gandhi, submit to the calls for action that this man made throughout his long political life. So leaders don't have the authority. Leaders cannot coerce their followers into performing a certain action. Leaders try to influence the followers, try to encourage the followers to perform a certain action without having recourse to coercion, right? So some people say that Mao Zedong was a great leader, and this crazy chap with a very unfortunate hairstyle, who is the great leader of North Korea, he's not a leader. He's a mad tyrant, right? Because it's not that he's trying to encourage people to do something. It's that if people don't dance to his music, they're going to rot in concentration camps. Leaders are not about Mao Zedong and the likes and Kim Jong-un. Leaders are more like this chap. And that's the sort of management style that we're going to talk for the duration of this lecture. Now, of course, leadership and authority have one more thing common with each other, with all their differences, other than, you know, people having authority and leadership at the same time. There's one more commonality, similarity between leadership and authority, namely that in both cases there is a commitment problem, right? There's a commitment problem. And what is a commitment problem in the case of leadership? Before we get there, let me just very briefly review the actions that are typically associated with leaders in management literature on leadership. And the management literature on leadership is huge. There are lots of books, academic books, as well as so-called self-help books. These are really funny reading. And one of these books I will present during the lecture today is really got me laughing when I read it. But the literature is huge. And this is a digest of actions, a digest of tasks that leaders are said to do. So one task that leaders do is the task of creating trust. So here is a team suffering from free riding problem, and cooperation is needed. Cooperation is higher levels of cooperation are higher between people who regard themselves as partners than people who regard themselves as strangers. People who regard themselves as partners develop trust over time, over the history of their interaction. The trust that they develop over the history of their interaction increases the likelihood of them contributing to the public good rather than free riding on the contributions of others into the public good. Now, recalling this dynamic public goods game, the outcome is that people is that in teams in which there's more trust are more likely to contribute to the public good and therefore arrive at welfare maximizing outcomes. So creating trust is one of the tasks that leaders do. Leaders also act as experts, act as thought leaders. There's a term, thought leader, right? So Peter Drucker, everybody knows who he was, right? He was a thought leader in management. Peter Drucker? Leaders act as experts. Leaders set norms, goals, and targets. So this is where leadership comes close to authority and yet remain quite different things. You can have a leader trying to set and enforce a norm. You can have a person of authority setting and enforcing the norm by means of coercion. The leader has no recourse to the means of coercion. Therefore, the norm enforcement proceeds voluntarily. And yet, leaders do try to set norms and try to enforce them. Now, the most interesting task of what leaders do, other than creating trust, acting as experts, setting norms and targets, is they accumulate and share information with the followers. So this statement is very wide. It may be even too abstract, because it tries to embrace the many different actions that logically fall under this heading. So typically, you know, the mental picture that many people have when they think about a leader is someone who is trying to direct the group in a certain towards a certain action, right? So here's a political leader on the political leaders on the left who say that let us increase taxes to 75% and let us appropriate the properties of capitalists, let us confiscate houses that are temporarily uninhabited and give them as social housing. This is, you know, leaders, political leaders, leaders of their parties, trying to direct the society towards a certain action, right? So they, what they do is they accumulate information about the state of the world. They read newspapers and they find that, you know, in the city of Constance, the rents are so extremely high, and yet there are poor people who have to live in these small vagues, and there are very rich people from Stuttgart who have villas on the lake, and they spend maybe 2 or 3 weeks a year there. So why not introduce a tax on people who have property in Constance and yet are not permanently registered in Constance? This is actually a policy measure. You may be aware of it, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, right? So I live in Radolfzell, and Radolfzell is yet to develop such measures. So I'm not yet, you know, even though I'm not permanently registered in Radolfzell, I have a property in Radolfzell, and I don't yet pay taxes there, additional to the usual property taxes that everyone is paying. So here's the political leader on the right, who has also acquired information about the state of the world and who has found out that when you overregulate the property market, what you get is chronic housing shortages, and people are willing to pay lots of money. They cannot buy things very easily because property transactions are rare, because people are unwilling to advertise properties for sale, because many properties that are on the market are restricted in their commercial use because they are long-term residents. There is this Mietschutz in Radolfzell and Konstanz. So if you want to buy an apartment, and if there is someone who is using this apartment as social housing, someone who falls below a certain income level, you can't throw them out unless it be in 32 years' time from now. So there are all sorts of imperfections on the property market, and as a result of it, Nick slept in various guest houses around Bodensee during the first 6 months of his employment on the chair, simply because he couldn't find anything suitable. And so here comes a sort of more right-wing leader and says, let us abandon housing market regulation, let us kick out the social housing tenants, and let us commercialize the property market on Bodensee, let us build more houses around the lake, and this Naturschutz can go to hell. So there are different views, and the holders of these views, they base their views on the information that they collect. So it's not unlike the agent who invests effort into finding out which project is best, but also not unlike the agent, leaders have their own agenda, and therefore they collect information about the world, and they share the bits of information about the world that they find most to their advantage. Now, the people who are supposed to follow them, the people who leaders hope will follow them, understand it. People are not stupid. So whenever you see a leader trying to mobilize the crowd, trying to mobilize the team into certain action, the very big question is a question of credibility. Is this leader really so altruistic as to have no other purposes of trying to motivate people into doing certain things other than the greater social good? Come on. You know, leaders have their own agenda. And the sort of information that they, the sort of agenda that they publicly prosecute, the sort of information that they publicly spread, trying to mobilize people to perform a certain course of action, is influenced not only by the superior information that they have about the state of the world, but also by their personal agenda. Here comes a very big problem for leadership, the problem of credibility. Namely, how do you, as a follower, how do you separate in the message that you receive from the leader? How do you separate the evidence that the leader has information that you don't have and following the leader's advice, which is based on better information than you have, will improve the social outcomes, including the outcome for you. How do you separate this with the personal interest that leaders may have for directing you to perform a certain course of action, which will not necessarily benefit you to the same extent as it will benefit the leader? Do you understand the tension here? So let me illustrate it with the following game. So this is the as basic and as simple mechanical primitive illustration of the leadership credibility problem that I as simple as I could find. So consider the following game. It's a strange game because this game has three participants in it. So two active participants who have to make a choice and one passive participant who basically calls the shots, who determines the states of the world that bring about these certain payoffs. So here's the nature. And the nature can have two states. The day can be good or the day can be bad. Now, if the day is good, then these pairs of payoffs will be realized for the leader and for the follower if the follower works hard and if the follower works easy. So very, very carefully, once again, if the day is good, the state of nature is good, and the follower works hard, the follower's payoff will be 400,000 euros, and the leader's payoff will be 5. So the payoff for the leader are in bold, the payoff for the follower are in the italics. You see? If, however, the day is good and the follower works not so hard, the follower gets a payoff of 3 and the leader gets a very low payoff of 2. So what you see here is the leader is interested in declaring that the state of the world is good, and if the state of the world is good, the follower should work hard. When the follower works hard, the leader gets a lot of money. So when the state of the world is good, the leader and the follower, the incentives of the leader and the follower are compatible because it's profitable for the follower to work hard as well. So working hard when the day is good is in the best interest of the leader and the follower. So if only I know whether it's going to be a good day or bad day, I will listen to the leader when he says the day is good, because if the day is good, I can benefit by working harder than by working less hard. So far, so unproblematic. The problem begins when the state of the world is actually bad, when the day is bad. So, when the day is bad and the follower works hard, the follower gets a payoff of 0 because it does make sense to work hard when the day is bad. The leader gets a payoff of 2. And when the follower works easy on the bad day, the follower can get some low payoff, but still not zero payoff by conserving effort. But then because the follower doesn't put in a lot of effort, the leader doesn't benefit much. So what do you see from this matrix? You see from this matrix that when the state of the nature is in fact good, it makes sense to work hard for the follower. But when the state of nature is in fact bad, it makes sense to work easy for the follower, but not for the leader. So remember what leaders do. Leaders accumulate and share information with the followers. The follower doesn't know if it's a good day or a bad day. The follower doesn't know the state of nature. The follower doesn't know whether housing market restrictions in regulations in Constance are good or bad for business and for welfare of the citizens of Constance. The follower is not really a very educated person in the matters related to the economics of housing market. The leader is an educated person in the matters of economics of housing market, or at least this is the impression that the leader is trying to create. And so the follower should ideally listen to the leader and submit to the more informed opinion of the leader, right? Right? Well, not really. Not really. Because the leader, when the state is bad, the leader still has the incentive to say, no, the world is great, the state of nature is the best you can have, the day is perfect, you have to work hard. The leader, regardless of the state of the world, whether it's good or bad, the leader will always have the incentive to say to the follower that the follower should work hard and the day is good. See? So, yes, the leader is informed. Yes, the leader has information that the follower doesn't have. And this information is useful. It can increase productivity. But the problem is that the leader can choose which information to give to the follower, and this choice is not random with respect to the payoffs that the leader anticipates. And that creates a problem. So when I hear that the leader is telling me that the day is good, I imagine this matrix and I think to myself, does he really mean it? Or is he trying to increase his payoff when the day is bad, right? So, leader is always weakly better off by announcing that the state of nature is good. The follower understands this and may not, and does not believe with 100% probability, does not believe that the state of the world is good, you know? And the follower may actually choose not to work hard, even when the leader is in fact telling the truth. This is the problem of leader's credibility. So if you look at the payoffs for the follower, what will be the dominating strategy for the follower? There's no dominating strategy for the follower, right? Because when the state of the world is good, the strategy is to work hard. When the state of the world is bad, the strategy is to work easy. No one is dominating. But if you do mixed strategy, right? If you do mixed strategy, then if your subjective belief that the state of the world is bad is more than half, or the same subjective probability that the state of the world is good is less than a half, then the follower will completely disregard what the leader is saying. The follower will always work easy. So there is reality that the follower doesn't know. The follower has only imperfect beliefs about it. There is the reality that the leader knows for sure, and the leader tries to communicate information about this reality. This communication, this information should be useful for the follower. The problem is that the follower may not always believe the leader. Do you understand? Right? It's very important that you understand it. Very important that you understand it. And as a consequence, if you have a very pessimistic follower, whose subjective belief that the day is good is less than half, this follower will not listen to the leader, even when the leader is telling the truth, and the neglect of valuable information about the state of the world leads to the loss of welfare. So if we want to maximize welfare, this is the problem for us to think about. And the leader can be a solution to the problem of maximizing welfare under imperfect information about the state of the world. Now, to solve this problem, it is imperative to make leadership credible. It is imperative to design a mechanism that ensures that the leader will tell the truth, or will tell the truth more often than his own interest would dictate. And there are three possible solutions to the problem of leadership credibility. So one solution is obvious, is reputation. And it's a very, very simple solution. If you have repeated interaction, the leader makes announcements about the state of the world, theta hat. This is the announcement if the day is good or if the day is bad. These announcements are on record and are available to all. Now, you also have a history of the real state of the world, or states of the world, and then the follower compares the leader's announcements about the state of the world with the true state of the world and can deduce whether the leader was telling the truth or not. If the leader was always telling the truth, so all theta hats were equal to all thetas at all period of time, the leader was always telling the truth. So now when the leader is telling you that the state of the world is good, you will have an inclination to follow the leader's advice and work hard. If the leader is telling you the state of the world is bad, you'll have an inclination to follow the leader's advice and work easy. Because if the leader, given the history of observations, if the leader tries to lie to you, then the credibility, the reputation of the leader will be ruined, and we are back to the bad equilibrium of the follower ignoring the leader's advice. It's mechanically, it's exactly the same as the repeated public goods game that we studied last week, right? So if your discount rate is not too high, you will appreciate the future discounted values of cooperation more than the present value of deviating from this cooperation by telling the lie in this case. And so you will repetition of the interaction between leader and the follower will ensure that the leader will tell the truth in the equilibrium and the follower will listen to the leader, which is of course welfare maximizing situation. So this is this is as far as reputation is concerned. Now, so another solution to the credible leadership. This is more interesting. This so-called leading by sacrifice. Have you heard? I don't know if you've heard the term leading by sacrifice. It's basically in economic terms. Well, okay, let me start with non-economic terms. It's about the leader publicly denying him or herself an opportunity to profit from a certain action, right? So you have, you have the winner of a court case donating the fine to charity purposes, or you have the politician, like the president, the current president of the United States, donating his salary to charity, right? So these are examples of leading by sacrifice. Now, what it means economically, by making a sacrifice, by denying yourself a certain material income that comes from that you could have a claim on, you send the signal that the state of the world is so good that you can afford to make this sacrifice. So here comes the problem of the credibility of the signal, which we will briefly consider now. So here's leading by sacrifice. And as I said, it's about the leader giving a public sacrifice. And by doing so, he sends a signal that the state of the world is really so good that he can afford giving the sacrifice. Let us try to relate this leadership style to the public goods game. Sorry, not the public goods game. To this nature game that we discussed some minutes ago. And let me illustrate the leading by sacrifice in terms of this game. So this is the matrix of payoffs, just to remind you. The nature determines the state of the world. The leader learns about the state of the world and gives this information to the follower, and then the follower decides whether to work hard or work easy. The credibility problem is because when the nature draws a bad state, the leader will still have the incentive to say that the state of the world is good because he will be always better off from the follower working hard. And then the follower may choose not to believe the leader. How to make it credible is to lead by sacrifice. And suppose the leader in this environment, suppose the leader announces, makes an announcement that the state of the world is great, and at the same time with his announcement, he throws a party. So he invites everybody, he gives drinks and food and hires some performers and say, guys, the world is really great, the good times are coming, let us all work hard to make the most of the good times coming. What does the follower think to himself? The follower thinks to himself, this party costs a lot of money. And making this sacrifice, throwing this party, will only make sense if the state of the world is good. Because look here, if the state of the world is good and we work hard, the leader will get 5. And if we work easy, the leader will get 2. So the money at stake for the leader is 3, right? Whereas if the state of the world is bad, the money at stake for the leader is only 1. So here's a question to you. How much should the leader pay for the party in order for this expenditure to be a credible signal that the state of the world is good? Yeah? one or more, exactly. Because if the party, if this is a really big party, which costs 100,000 euros or more, what it means for the follower, it means that if the state of the world is really bad, it wouldn't make sense for the leader to organize this party in the first place. Because if the state of the world is bad, and you throw a party which costs more than 100,000 euros, your net costs after party, if I work hard, will be less than your outcome when I work easy, if the state of the world is bad. It is not true if the state of the world is good. Because if the state of the world is good, your outcome will be 3 minus the costs of the party. And if the party costs between 100,000 and 300,000, it makes sense to throw this party when the state of the world is good, but it doesn't make sense to throw this party when the state of the world is bad. Do you understand? Right? So the party has to be big enough. The sacrifice has to be big enough in order to send a credible signal that the state of the world is really good. Now, there are lots of examples of leading by sacrifice. You know, think about how many parties, Ausflüge, retreats, and other corporate events and team building exercises modern firms organize. Political announcements are typically made in pompous conditions with parades and musicians playing, etc. You can dismiss it as simply a habit. You can dismiss this as simply a sort of conventional way of doing things, but then try to dismiss the question, where does this convention come from? You know? Why don't you just print your agenda on the wall and get people to read it? Why do you need this pomp? You need this pomp to signify that the state of the world is great, that I really mean that the state of the world is great. Otherwise, I wouldn't have made such effort as to communicate this information to you. So this is leading by sacrifice. And we will talk more about leading by sacrifice later on in the lecture. Now let us get back to the third and final solution of the leadership credibility problem. And this is the central solution. This is called leading by example. So leading by sacrifice and leading by example. In leading by sacrifice, the leader just throws a party, but he doesn't move a finger. He just has fun during the party. In leading by example, the leader actually puts in effort into the cause that he advocates. So, Albert Gore, remember Albert Gore? Albert Gore? Bill Clinton's Secretary of State. Bill Clinton? So Albert Gore, he wasn't famous only by being Bill Clinton's Secretary of State. He actually also made a good career as an environmental advocate. So he advocates a lot of environmental causes, and he has lots of blogs and publishes articles that, you know, guys, we really should go green and stuff and stuff and stuff. And, so he tries to be a leader in, moving the world from this carbon intense economy to more green economy, and not only economy, but also lifestyle. And he sounded quite convincing until the time that some journalists discovered that he had a really luxurious big house with very inefficient energy provisions. So like hot spas and swimming pools and saunas, etc., etc. And then, you know, the question was, Mr. Gore, why don't you practice what you preach? So leading by example is about practicing what you preach. If you say that the state of the world is good, go and work. You know, go and work. Give us a signal, not only by the word of mouth, not only by throwing a party. Give us a signal that the state of the world is good by going and doing some work yourself. So, leader's choice of effort may reflect the state of the world that the leader has observed. Right? The leader has information about the state of the world, and he takes an action which is commensurate with the state of the world. Everybody observes that the leader is working hard. The signal that people get from observing that the leader is working hard is that, the state of the world must be good, right, now that the leader is working hard. So people will start working hard as well. Or will they? That's still not a very clear yes answer, because part of the reason why the leader is trying to work hard is in order to try and influence the workers to work hard, the followers to work hard, regardless of what the state of the world really is. But to understand it, it's a very difficult strategic problem. To understand it, we have to use a little model to really pinpoint what is going on there. So let us consider a variant of the public goods game, standard public goods game, pretty standard, right? So you have a team of N people producing the output, which is the sum of individual contributions. This sum of individual contributions is multiplied by the parameter theta, and theta is the parameter whose value corresponds to the state of the world. If the state of the world is bad, theta is very low, close to zero, so your efforts are very unproductive. If the state of the world is good, theta is close to one, it means that your efforts are very productive. Now, people contribute to the team's output, and they do so at a cost, at a quadratic effort cost, which are specified here. The leader is just one of the team. The leader has no special status, except that the leader knows the true state of the world. The leader knows the true theta, whereas the rest of the team does not know the true theta and base their decisions on their expectation of theta rather than the true value of theta that occurs, that actually has occurred. That's the only difference between the leader and the followers. Other than that, no differences. And in particular, in this example, the output in the team is distributed equally, so the leader doesn't get any higher or lower share in output. Okay, so let us try to predict the actions of the leader and the followers by finding a Nash equilibrium effort level with and without the leader. So without the leader, the Nash equilibrium effort level is trivial to find. It's just the expected value of theta divided by n. You just maximize the difference between your share in output and the costs of effort, and it works out as the expected value of theta divided by n. Now suppose you have a leader, and the leader tells the people that the leader sends a signal to the followers about the state of the world, and this signal is denoted as theta hat. Now, theta hat may or may not be equal to theta, right? If theta hat is equal to theta, leadership is fully credible. The leader is simply telling the truth, but the theta hat may not be equal to theta, and most of the times it will not be equal to theta. Why? Because by communicating this on the state of the world, the leader will have strategic incentives to be too optimistic about the state of the world. Why? Look here. This is the payoff of the leader. The payoff of the leader is a function of the true theta. No expectations here, because the leader knows the true state of the world. Okay. The payoff of the leader is a function of the true state of the world, and it's also the function of the effort levels of the followers, of the rest of the team, of the N-1 people, the rest of the team, who will listen to leader's announcement and will base their effort decisions on the leader's announcement. Now, as you can see, the higher the you can't see it yet, but believe me right now, I will show you it later on. The higher the signal the leader is sending about the state of the world, the higher effort he's hoping to extract from the followers. And the higher effort he will end up extracting from the followers, the higher his payoff will be. Because notice, this effort comes at no cost to the leader. He's only responsible for his effort costs. You see this? So the leader has a strategic incentive to over-report, to say that the state of the world is better than it actually is. Why? Because of this term. Okay. So now everybody knows this. Everybody knows this, and guess what? It's not going to work, right? What is because if the leader says the world is super great, the state of the world is very good, the state of the world is very positive, everybody knows about the payoff function of the leader and immediately understands that the leader has an incentive to over represent, to over-present the state of the world, overstate the state of the world. What is going to help is the effort that the leader will choose to exert. The leader's payoff is positively influenced by effort, but the optimal amount of effort that the leader will choose to put in is influenced also by the true state of the world. So the better is the state of the world, the more effort the leader will optimally choose to invest, because the state of the world increases the marginal product of this effort, leaving the costs of effort the same. So people will not be impressed with the announcements that the leader is making. People will be impressed by the effort that the leader is putting in into the provision of public good, because the more effort the leader is putting into the provision of public good, the better the state of the world is. So unlike simply announcing that the state of the world is good, which is not credible and is not going to impress a lot of people, putting more effort by the leader will impress people, and they will start putting in higher effort as well. So leading by example is welfare improving, because why? Well, the effort response of the other members of the team, this is the effort response of the other members of the team, in response to the effort that they observe from the leader, is going to be positive. Why? Because the leader's higher effort signals higher theta. If people are going to respond positively to the leader's effort, the expected value of the leader's payoff is going to be larger than the expected value of the leader's payoff when the leader does not put in, does not demonstrate the state of the world with effort, and simply gives a announcement of the state of the world which no one is going to believe. So leading by example is welfare improving because everybody's effort increases. The followers' effort increase, the leader's effort increase because the leader's payoff is now going to be higher, everybody's effort increase, and given that before the leader everybody's effort level was way below welfare maximizing, what we see here is not only the increase in effort, but also the improvement in welfare. So leaders are good. Leaders, teams need leaders, because leaders, when they lead by example, improve the welfare outcomes of this team. Can we do better than this? There will be a tutorial on leadership next week, and some of these issues related to leading by example will be considered in greater detail during this tutorial, so I will be referring to it throughout the lecture. So, so far we've assumed that the leader is just like anyone else and getting 1/n share of the output that the team has collectively produced. Are we doing the best we can when we distribute the output of the team equally between team members? Can we further improve welfare with the leader by redistributing the shares in the team's output between the leader and the follower? So, you know, it's not written in law that the leader should get an equal share of the team's output together with someone else, right? The leader could get more or the leader could get less than his or her proportional share in team's output. It turns out that output redistribution within the team, such that the leader's share is less than the follower's share, will improve welfare. Why? The tutorial will explain why. There will be some maths during the tutorial, and I hope you will understand the mechanics of it. Let me now hand wave around this to give you the intuition. Let's get back to the first order condition for the leader's effort. The leader's effort is influenced by the state of the world. And to the extent to which the leader's effort is influenced by the state of the world, the followers say, he's putting in high effort, it means that the state of the world is good, let us work hard as well. However, there is another influence on the leader's chosen effort, And the other influence on the leader's chosen effort is the anticipated reaction of the followers to the leader's chosen effort. And this is a positive term here. So the leader's effort is influenced not only by the state of the world, it's also positively influenced by the effort or by the effort reactions of the other followers. So when you see leader working extra hard, it's for two reasons. First, the state of the world is good, and second is he expects that you will work harder when he works harder. Now, of course, the followers, being naturally pessimistic and incredulous and not believing to whatever leader is saying or doing, the followers will take this into account and adjust their expectation of the state of the world based on the leader's actions. It's a very deep point, and I invite you to think about it extra hard. So when you see leader working hard, it's for two reasons. You are only interested in one reason, the state of the world. So, and there's also the other reason, that he expects you to work harder, regardless of what the state of the world is, because it's going to be beneficial for him. And you dismiss the second reason, you only try to deduce about the state of the world based on the first reason. And that this is a very complicated Bayesian updating process going on there. The bottom line is that if the output is distributed equally in the team, the leader will work super hard and the followers will not work as hard as the leader. Why will the followers not work as hard as the leader? Because part of the reason why the leader is working hard is to try and influence the effort level of the others. But this part of the reason will be exactly ignored by the followers who will not work as hard as the leader. Now, Pareto optimality requires that welfare, the necessary condition for welfare maximization, and tutorial will show this to you, requires that the effort level, the optimal effort level of everybody in the team should be equal. And given that the leader's effort is higher than the effort level of the rest of the team, clearly we are not in the Pareto optimal situation. How to make this situation Pareto optimal? The necessary condition, though not sufficient, the necessary condition for Pareto optimality is when everybody is putting in the same level of effort. You will see it in the tutorial. And the shares in the team's output that goes to the leader and goes to the followers can be redistributed in such a way as to ensure that everybody is putting in the same level of effort. And under these shares, you will derive them during the tutorial. The leader and the followers will put in the same level of effort towards the public good. And you will quickly calculate then that this unequal output redistribution is bringing higher level of welfare than equal output redistribution with the leader. But you will also learn that this redistribution does not bring you the first best. It just moves you a little bit further from the second best, but it doesn't quite deliver you the first best. Why? Because equal effort level is a necessary but not sufficient conditions for the first best. Very interesting stuff. Make sure you come to the tutorial and participate in the tutorials. So basically, the maths part, as far as leading by example is concerned, is over. Let us now try to relate this to the management literature on leadership. And one of the books that I came across when I was doing a literature survey, when I was reading up to prepare for this lecture, is this hilarious book called The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. It's the book of the style Microsoft Windows for Idiots or Econometrics for Dummies. It's this, you know, soft-bound books that people read on public transport. So I got hold of this book, and there was 21 irrefutable. You know what irrefutable is? It cannot be refuted. It cannot be proved wrong, right? So the guy is talking the divine wisdom in this soft-bound book. He's an evangelical pastor, by the way, so of course everything is irrefutable in his own world. But this book sometimes makes some sense, you know, let's give this to it. And John Maxwell is certainly a world's expert in leadership and management. He makes lots of money by consulting various organizations on the matters of leadership. So yes, let's listen to John Maxwell, even though irrefutable, I'm not so sure. So here comes Law 18, which says the law, which is called aptly for this lecture, the law of sacrifice. It says you have to sacrifice if you want to be a leader. And it also says that if you're moving higher up the leadership ladder, you have to sacrifice more. Yeah, sure. But it actually makes sense if we talk about leading by sacrifice. Because you know, if you want to sound credible, you have to show your credibility, and making sacrifices is a credible way of showing that what you're saying is true, and therefore everybody should listen to you. So we've seen this example with leading by sacrifice, and the guy is developing some theory around it. Now, but there is a great deal of confusion. There's a great deal of confusion between leading by sacrifice and leading by example. These are two different solutions to the leadership credibility problem, and yet the management literature is confused about it. Let's look at Maxwell. Maxwell is all over the place. He says, leaders are asked to give up more than others. That's leading by sacrifice. Other times he says, you must keep giving up to stay up. Other times he says, there's no success without sacrifice. Every person has achieved, man. It's a soft-bound book for a train, yeah. Any success in life has made sacrifices to do so. Oh, how profound. Effective leaders sacrifice much that is good in order to dedicate themselves to what's best. The story is basically every leader has to go to uni and flatten his bottoms listening to leadership lectures, and then he has to, you know, go and work, and then he has to do something good for the environment. That's leading by example as well as leading by sacrifice. Right, so there's a lot of confusion in literature. Okay, this is a book, a sort of self-help book, not very, very authoritative in terms of academics, even though not without its merit. I stress that it's a book that, you know, is written by a person who is certainly capable of thinking about leadership. But here's a very influential paper in a top journal, in a top psychology journal called Journal of Applied Psychology, by the Knippenberg couple from the Netherlands. I used to work with Dan van Knippenberg at Erasmus University Rotterdam. This is the best you can get if you're an academic psychologist. And they ran a series of experiments where they showed, as the title suggests, that leaders' self-sacrifice and effectiveness of leadership are positively correlated. So basically, when leaders are sacrificing themselves, in the language of Barbara and Dan van Knippenberg, the team outcomes are better than when leaders don't self-sacrifice. But what is leader self-sacrifice in their wonderful paper? It's a good paper, but it's a very, very confused paper about the leading by sacrifice and leading by example. So these are just extracts from their paper that explain the experimental conditions that correspond to non-self-sacrificing and self-sacrificing. So basically, this is one of the studies where people have to come up with creative ideas, the more the better. And in the non-self-sacrificing condition, the followers received this message from the leader. The message said, guys, you have to come up with innovative ideas, but I do other things, therefore I will not contribute. In the self-sacrificing condition, the leader says, I am the leader, and because I am the leader, despite my other obligations, I will contribute lots of ideas just like you do, because I am such a wonderful leader. As you can see from the descriptions of these conditions, this is not really leading by sacrifice. It is leading by example. Because what changes between the non-sacrificing and sacrificing, self-sacrificing condition is the level of effort to which the leader commits himself. And when we talk about leaders choosing effort rather than making a sacrifice, it's leading by example rather than leading by sacrifice. Now, why am I spending time on distinguishing between leading by example and leading by sacrifice? The reason is that there's a big difference, and this difference has strategic implications. The difference between leading by sacrifice and leading by example is that leading by sacrifice is essentially wasteful, right? These costs that you spend on throwing a party, they are not productive costs. They are not really increasing the welfare of people. They are not increasing the amount of public good that the team is producing. It's basically something that they eat and drink away without any effect on the amount of output that they create, right? So it's a waste, pure waste, leading by sacrifices. And that makes sense, you know, that makes sense because the whole point of leading by sacrifice is to send a signal. And as you know from Personnel Economics 1, from signaling models that we considered back then, pure signaling is wasteful. When you signal your productivity on the labor market by acquiring more education, you're acquiring education not because it's going to make you more productive. You're acquiring more education because everybody is going to be impressed and say, wow, this must be a smart person, because the cost of education for not so smart person would be prohibitively high for them to get education. The same story here. The cost of throwing a party would have been prohibitively high if the state of the world had been bad. But the event of throwing a party, the event of leading by sacrifice, in a sense, in its own way, is wasteful. Whereas leading by example is not wasteful, is not completely wasteful. It is not efficient, and we've seen why it's not efficient, because leading by example fails to create first best. But it's not entirely wasteful, because when there is leading by example, the leader actually works and thus contributes to the output of the team. Right? So these two leadership modalities are very different in this aspect. And the implication is, if you want to do some Mitarbeiterführung, if you want to use some leadership in the management of your enterprises, make sure that you don't only throw parties each and every time, which is a pure waste, but you actually get your bosses and leaders to show effort, and by showing effort, advertise more effectively the good state of the world. However, the literature can be, of course, excused. It makes sense. It's understandable why there's so much confusion over this distinction between leading by example and leading by sacrifice, because indeed there are similarities, right? The similarities are both leading by sacrifice and leading by example involve a personal sacrifice. If you lead by sacrifice, you throw a party. So your money, part of your money is gone. If you lead by example, you put in a level of effort which is higher than your personal profit maximization would dictate. Right? So it's the payoff loss and payoff loss by leader and payoff gain by followers in the output redistribution as compared to the equal output distribution. You can see in the tutorial more elaboration on this. So there is an element of sacrifice in both leading by sacrifice and leading by example. However, the sacrifice is not productive, is wasteful when we talk about leading by sacrifice, and is productive, even though not fully productive, when we talk about leading by example. So finally, you know, if this leading by sacrifice is such a bad practice, why do you still have lots of corporate parties? Why do you still have a lot of pomp about, around leaders announcing the state of the world? The most likely reason seems to be that leaders' effort may not be very well observed. Leaders' effort may not be observed, right? So the leader may put in a lot of effort in the privacy of their office, but when the leader is leading an organization of thousands of people, the actual effort that the leader is putting in may not be observed and therefore will fail to impress the followers. Sacrifice is more observable. So the observability of effort and sacrifice, the difference in the extent to which effort and sacrifice are observed, is favorable for leading by sacrifice, and that's why you still have leading by sacrifice among the core leadership practices. Any questions so far? No. So let's move on to the final part of this lecture, and the final part of this lecture is about who becomes the leader. So far we've assumed, we've dealt with a situation in which there was a team, and in this team there was a leader, and we have no idea how this leader emerged from the members of the team. Is it a hereditary king, or is it some kind of merit-based selection procedure, or is it a random event? It turns out that it's not entirely a random event. This element has some randomness in it. So who becomes the leader is not predetermined, right? But it also has some non-random element, namely that the leader emerges in organizations through coordination. That's, by the way, another difference between leadership and authority. Authority has clear monetary benefits, and therefore people are willing to make sacrifices to win authority. Leadership does not have obvious monetary benefits, right? It has some indirect monetary benefits. Look at the maths model of the leading by example, but these benefits can well be removed from the leader if you redistribute output in the team. So leadership doesn't have obvious monetary benefits, and yet leadership may incur certain costs, because if you are the leader, you're supposed to observe the true state of the world. How do you observe the true state of the world? You go out there and do some study. If you're a politician, you go to the library, you go to talk to people, you watch lots of television, you try to make sense of the world, and then given your information that you have collected, you try to become leader. You try to be leader with your people. Now, acquiring information about the state of the world comes at a cost, C, right? And in the absence of obvious benefits to leadership, I don't know who would be willing to do so. And yet, of course, there are many more teams that have a leader than fully self-organized teams without an obvious leader. So leadership is a sort of a very popular way teams are organized. So let us look at the process of coordination between team members in deciding who will become the leader. Here's the problem. Suppose everybody decides to go and acquire the information about the state of the world. So there's a team of an individual, and everybody will go and become a leader. That's not what's going to happen. That's not what should happen, because it's wasteful. Right? If everybody goes on to obtain information about the true state of the world and on this qualification to become a leader, you will waste a lot of money, because the same information will be obtained n minus one times more than it's required. You only need to obtain this information once and then project it to the rest of the team. The fact that everybody is doing it means a waste. Right? So on the other hand, if no one obtains information about the true state of the world, there will be a loss. What is this loss? Well, this loss is expressed in the following formula, which you will be asked to derive during the tutorial, so make sure you do come to the tutorial. So let us reconsider. If you don't have information about the state of the world, if there is no leader, what will be your payoff? Your payoff will be based on your effort, which effort will in turn be based on your expected value of the state of the world. So that's what theta bar means, expected state of the world. So you've had a history of state of the world, so you calculate the average, and this is your best guess about the state of the world. This is the maximum likelihood estimate of the state of the world. And you will make your decisions based on your expected state of the world, and you will obtain a payoff based on your expected state of the world. Now, if you know the state of the world, if you know the state of the world, you will make your decision based on the true state of the world, and your payoff will be based on your decision based on the true state of the world. So, are you better off obtaining information about the state of the world as compared to not obtaining the information about the state of the world? Yes, of course you are. You are better off. Why? Because the difference between your expected payoffs with the knowledge and without the knowledge is determined by this calculation and is positive. It depends on the variance of theta. It can be zero. If the state of the world is predetermined, so it doesn't vary, the variance of theta is zero, and then it doesn't make sense. It's trivial, because the state of the world will always be the same as before, right? I don't need to go and become a leader in trying to tell you that the gravity constant has changed. You're not going to believe me because the gravity constant hasn't changed. It's the same as it was before, about 10 Newton per kilogram meter squared. So, right? But if the political and economic situation changes, it's uncertain, the variance of it is not zero, is considerable. The benefit from obtaining information about the state of the world is there, and it is not zero, right? So, this benefit needs to be compared with the costs of obtaining information about the state of the world. Here's where the coordination game comes to play. As I said, it takes only one team member to obtain information about the true state of the world. If there are two or three members obtaining the same information, it's going to be wasteful. So everybody in the team decides whether to obtain, whether to invest C or not to invest C in obtaining information about the state of the world. Now, for those for whom these costs of obtaining information are high, will decide with higher probability not to obtain information. And those for whom these costs are low will decide with higher probability to obtain this information. But if you can't coordinate ex ante, if you cannot agree on who will go and become the leader, then you will play a mixed strategy equilibrium, you will flip a virtual coin, and with probability pi, pi is a function of your costs, you will obtain this information. With probability 1 minus pi, you will not obtain this information. The first order condition that determines, it's a system of first order conditions, it's the n equations, that determine the probability with which each individual team member will decide to obtain information about the state of the world and will therefore become the leader is determined by the following system of first order conditions. Solving them for individual probabilities with which people will obtain information about the state of the world gives you this expression. Now, this expression looks scary. But what it means, let's see what it means. And the only thing that we need to understand is the relationship between the likelihood of becoming a leader and the costs of obtaining information about the state of the world. So let us see what happens to, let's take individual I, and let us see what happens to the probability of individual I becoming a leader in response to the costs of this person acquiring information about the state of the world that will enable him to become a leader. If the costs of information increases, this term increases in magnitude, right? But this term has a minus sign in front of it. So this term increasing in magnitude means this logarithm decreasing in magnitude. If this logarithm decreasing in magnitude in response to the increase in the costs of acquiring information about the state of the world, it means that the p in this logarithm will increase. Because the only way to decrease this logarithm in response to increase in the magnitude of this negative term is to increase the p. So we come to the conclusion which is opposite to what I surmised some minutes ago without you challenging me. The conclusion is one of the most counterintuitive conclusions that I have ever seen. It turns out that your individual probability of becoming a leader is positively related to your personal costs of acquiring information about the state of the world, believe it or not. So if it's very easy for you to learn about the state of the world, if your costs of effort are not so large, you will be less likely to become a leader, believe it or not. Yeah? And why? Let's try to understand the intuition why. The maths is here, and you know this maths is very scary. But let's try to understand the intuition. Let's try to understand what's going on. What is going on is free riding. What is going on is free riding. You see, these first order conditions for individual propensities to obtain information about the state of the world are common knowledge. Everybody knows everything, right? So I know who is I know the different abilities and different costs of effort of all my team members, and my team members know my ability and my cost of effort. So we know each other's propensity to obtain information about the state of the world. And if, you know, if my personal costs of obtaining information are high, then the probability that other members will say, okay, he should do that, will increase. Why will it increase? From my first order condition. Left-hand side goes up, right-hand side should go up, right? So higher costs of obtaining information implies greater probability that other members will not obtain this information. Because the only way to make this right-hand side equal to the left-hand side, which goes up, is to reduce the P, is to reduce the probability of obtaining information by the other people in my team. Yeah? So this is why it's a version of free riding. This is why people with higher costs of obtaining information will be more likely to obtain this information and become a leader. However, there comes a point, there is a point, when the costs of information are so large. Suppose the costs of information are really very, very huge, right? So this product is going to be a very, very small number. This variance is going to be a small number because theta is between 0 and 1. This is also going to be a small number for large team size. So the product of these three is going to be a small number. And if the cost of obtaining information is very high, then we are in a corner solution. We are in a corner solution in which you just abandon the idea of obtaining information and ever becoming a leader. So people for whom the costs of obtaining information are very high, are prohibitively high, they are in a corner solution and they will play a pure strategy of P equals zero, which means that they will never become leader and they will never care about ever becoming a leader. So look here, there's an interesting nonlinearity. People with small c, people with c that is very, very small, they will not be so likely to become a leader as people with c somewhere in the middle. But people with very high c's are going to be extremely unlikely to become leader. They will be, they will choose p equals zero. What does this mean? What is the implication? Leaders are more likely to emerge from the middle of ability distribution and have neither too low nor too high costs of obtaining information. Think about it. Who are the leaders? They say that if you can't do anything, go and teach about it. Yeah? So who are the leaders? If you're talking about successful professionals who are great, who have achieved great success in their profession, right? They are unlikely to become presidents, mayors, members of parliaments, etc., because their practice will bring them lots of money and lots of recognition, right? The people who are useless and can't read or write, they will not become leaders either, because it's prohibitively expensive for them to read about the state of nature. So the productive guys will find it not worth their while. The unproductive guys will not be able to do so. The guys in the middle of the ability distribution will be the ones the middle of the distribution will be the breeding ground for leaders. And who are the leaders of the modern world? They are not the very top ability people. They are not the very bottom ability people, not all of them. They are from the middle, and that makes sense. Because it's precisely these people for whom the marginal costs and marginal benefits of obtaining information about the state of the world are close to each other. Now, the last part of the lecture is it's a continuation of the story that I am telling about coordinating on a leader. So when leadership doesn't bring obvious benefits but incurs costs, you need to coordinate. When ex ante coordination is impossible, then leadership or maybe a few leaders in the team emerge stochastically, but not fully stochastically, because the probability of leader emerging depends on the costs of effort required to obtain information about the state of the world. Now, suppose that you have a leader already, right, through this process of coordination. Let us consider what qualities of the leader are most conducive towards the welfare of the entire team. And this is the journey at the end of which I think you will discover some surprising facts, mathematical facts. So here's a team of two people. It doesn't have to be a two-member team, but you know, to make the math simple, let's stick to the two-member team. So there are two members in this team, Kurt and Maurits. So they are different from each other. They have different productivities, RK and RM, and they have different levels of effort. They can put in different levels of effort. So they produce output, which is determined by this formula. Well, it's as before. It's a common good, except that now individual efforts come with different weights, reflecting different productivities of Kurt and Maurits. Now, their costs of effort are quadratic. Nothing new here. Now, suppose that this team doesn't have a leader. So Kurt and Maurits just independently contribute to their team output, and this team output is shared in equal proportion between the members. So what will be their individual utility functions? Their individual utility functions will be their share in the total output minus the costs of effort. Now, the most interesting, the innovation here, is the third term. And this third term brings us back to the days of the conformity lecture, right? People have propensity to conform to performance norm. So Maurits doesn't want to look bad compared to Kurt, and Kurt doesn't want to look bad compared to Maurits. So they derive this utility from having their effort to being too different from the effort of their team members. These coefficients BM and BK stand for measuring propensity of the different team members to conform to the team performance level, right? So this is the conformity story. It's not a central story, by the way. It's just an interesting complication to the model, which we can live without. But the model in the leadership chapter of the organizational economics handbook, on which this lecture is written, has it. So when you have a team without a leader, everybody's maximizing their individual utility, and the Nash equilibrium determines the effort levels exerted by Maurits and Kurt without the leader. So these are SIM means simultaneous effort choice without the leader, which are determined by the productivities of Maurits and Kurt. The more productive Maurits is, the harder he will work. But they are also determined by their propensity to conform to the performance norm, and not only by their own propensity to conform to team's norm, but also by the propensity to conform to team's norm by the other team members. So these are the Nash equilibrium effort levels when there is no leader. Now, and we can see that. Did you have a question there? Did you have a question?
Yeah.
Yeah? What is your question? Well, why do we square? Well, suppose that Maurits is putting in effort which is way below Kurt's level of effort. Then this term will be negative. times something negative gives you positive. So how do you maximize your utility? You maximize your utility by choosing choosing zero level of effort. And so we'll make court, by the way. And so we'll do court, by the way. So if you don't have square here, then the obvious Nash equilibrium will be everybody is putting in zero level of effort, and that's not very interesting. The square, what the square does, the square allows for penalty to your utility when your effort is too different from the effort of the other guy. And you get penalty when you work too hard, and you also get penalty when you work too lightly. So that's what that's what the square is doing here. You understand?
Yeah.
Okay. So now these are the Nash equilibrium effort levels, and as you can see, these are suboptimal. They are not first best. Why are they not first best? Well, sit down and work it out. And when you sit down and work it out, you'll see that the first best level of effort should be. Well, for the case when everybody is the same, the first best level of effort would be equal to R, the productivity levels, and the Pareto optimal output will be 2R. What you see here is if everybody is the same, the levels of effort are below the first best, are below R, and therefore output is below R, and therefore we're not in the first best. That's not very surprising. We hardly ever are in first best in the world where actions are taken simultaneously without coordination. But now, let us suppose that there is a leader emerging in the team. You know, Maurit says, you know, Kurt, we've got to work hard. How the hell do you know, Maurits? Oh, you know, Kurt, I've read this, I've spoken to that guys, you know, they think that there will be more tourists coming to Konstanz, so we really should build more housing in order to cash in on the surge in the tourists from the north. You know, Kurt, I also read that the German population is graying, and more and more people choose to come to Bodensee to spend their retirement years. So we should not only build more houses, we should also build more Seniorenwohnungen, right? So let's do that, Kurt. Oh, Maurits, yeah, really, you've spoken to... Sure, let's do that. So now you have a team where there's a leader and there's a follower. How do we model this situation? The leader... instead of simultaneous choice of action, we now have Maurits choosing his action because Maurits is leading by example. Maurits is investing lots of money and lots of effort into building lots of Seniorenhausen. And Kurt is following Maurits in this enterprise. Okay, so because we now have a non-simultaneous but sequential effort choice game, there will be a new equilibrium, and as you may recall from your basic economics course, the so-called Stackelberg game. Yeah? So this is your Stackelberg. So you have firm one, Maurits is choosing effort first, and then Kurt observes the level of effort of Maurits and chooses his level of effort, but Maurits anticipates strategically the level of effort that Kurt will choose, and this affects Maurits' effort choice. This kind of thing. So here is Kurt's reaction to Maurits' effort is given by the reaction function, which is the same as before, but now when Maurits maximizes his utility, he takes into account the level of effort that Kurt will choose in response to Maurits' level of effort. So when you substitute Kurt's level of effort into Maurits' utility function, you now have a utility function which contains only Maurits' level of effort, maximizing which with respect to Maurits' level of effort gives you the following first-order condition from which the level of effort that Maurits will optimally choose is determined. And then when you do the algebra, you will find that Maurits' level of effort is determined by this expression. Now compare this effort choice with the effort choice of Maurits in the days when he wasn't the leader, when the actions were taken simultaneously. Compare them. The denominators are the same. The numerators are different. And what is the difference? What's so different in the numerators? You now have a new term, RK times BK. So Maurits' level of effort is higher than before by the term RK times BK. So the level of effort of Maurits is larger on the sequential move than when these level of efforts are simultaneously decided. What happens to our friend Kurt? Well, because Kurt's level of effort is positively related to Maurits' level of effort, Kurt's level of effort also increases. And you can work out the maths further and get the closed form solution for Kurt's level of effort, which will look morphologically similar to Maurits. But it's a very, very simple exercise. I'm sure everybody can do that. What is less trivial is to analyze the deeper implications of this leadership, of this leading by example in the Maurits Kurt team. Has the welfare improved as a result of leadership? Yes. Because efforts by Kurt and Maurits have increased, and because they were below first best, any increase in their effort is a movement towards first best, so the welfare has improved. By which margin has the welfare improved? By the margin which is the function of the product of RK times BK. So if you have a team of K and M, and you can decide who the leader should be, who would you choose to be the leader? Kurt or Maurits? If you choose Kurt as a leader, the Kurt's effort will be increased by the product of RM times BM, by the product of Maurits' productivity times Maurits' propensity to conform. If you choose Maurits to be the leader, Maurits' effort will be increased by Kurt's characteristics, right? Who is better as a leader, Maurits or Kurt, in terms of the total effort that this leadership, that this leading by example delivers? It turns out that the better leader, who the better leader is determined by the comparison of these products, RK times BK versus RM times BM. Now, R times B, what it means? It means that the welfare increases with RK times BK. So who should be the leader? The leader should be the person, the other person in the team, other than the most productive and most confirming. So if you have Kurt, who is super productive and has a huge conformity bias, and Maurits, who doesn't care about Kurt at all and is useless, who should be the leader? The leader should be the useless Maurits, not the productive Kurt. Because if the productive Kurt becomes the leader, his effort will be increased by the Maurits characteristics, which will in product give you zero. Whereas if Maurits, the useless Maurits, becomes the leader, his effort will be increased by the characteristics of the productive Kurt. So it turns out, in this model, and I think people can relate from this model to the wider world, it turns out that the optimal choice of the leader is the choice of the person who is less productive and more and less conformity biased. So someone who is not very good and someone who doesn't care about the others, about what the others are doing, right? Believe it or not. And this is an opportune time to finish today's lecture with a brief summary. So what have we learned? That leadership is an alternative to authority. The authority and leadership are very different things, even though people confuse them. The biggest difference is that there is no recourse to coercion in the matters related to leadership. That's why we never said anything about authority. So leaders do lots of useful things, and the activity of the leader that we concentrated our attention today is the discovery and communication of the relevant information about the state of the world. People should value leaders for the information and insight that they have to present to people. Unfortunately, leaders have their own motives to present information, and people take these motives into account and devalue the information that leaders present to them. That creates a leadership credibility problem. There are three solutions to the leadership credibility problem: the reputation, leading by sacrifice, and leading by example. The cleverest one is leading by example. So leading by example is also the most useful because it's not as wasteful as leading by sacrifice. And finally, we looked at who becomes the leader, and we discovered that it's not the very top people who become the leader. Not the very bottom, but not the very top either. So think about it. Prepare your questions during this week so that I would have enough time to answer them during the revision lecture next week, which will be the last lecture of this most wonderful course. Thank you.